The hour of 8:30 having arrived, I'll call to order state and local government operations, reform, technology, and elections. Representative Rukavina, you asked to be first. Where are you? He is not here. So, where is he? Representative Rukavina, you're up. You just barely made it.
8:30,
that's right. That's when we start. Representative Rukavina, I will move that House File 691 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 691 adds to current vacation donation sick leave, Mr. Chair. If you recall back, I think in about the mid-90s, we had put these contributions that state employees could donate to another employee for sick leave time. And what this bill does, basically, it adds sick leave also, besides, I believe, vacation time, to be able to be donated. It increases the hours from 12 to 40, and it adds a family, if you have a family member that's sick, to take care of. I think currently there's a 2-week waiting period, although I don't know where that is in statute. I think maybe that is, I don't know if it's an administrative decision or how it was negotiated. I think the commissioner had the powers to set this program up, so maybe that's where it came from. It says that you can get up to 6 months of hours donated, and then there's an appeals process if you're refused. And it includes the unions in making those decisions. So that's what the bill does, members. I have had, in my own district, I've had 3 members that have had cancer that have been refused. They evidently weren't sick enough to use this program, and so I was asked to do this by a constituent of mine. And I've introduced the bill, and I'd appreciate your support. I think Stewart's got some concerns on it. And I thought that I was supposed to have ASCII representative, but I don't see her in the audience today for support of the bill. Although I see a MAID representative, he might want to.
Representative Richmond Diskins has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, did the donors earmark their donations, or is it just placed into a general pool which any recipient may draw from?
I think, Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure on that. I think they can specify a person, or maybe just generically donate to. I think that's the way the process works.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, if you could have, I sit on finance also, and I would be interested in that, so I will hear this at the next committee if it prevails here.
Representative Chair, there's an agency representative here that I'm sure can answer that, Mr. Bisson, but I think Representative Bisson, that I'm correct in that.
Yes, do we have a representative from the current Department of Finance and soon to be the Minnesota Management and Budget Office?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
Don't we have to approve that name thing?
Representative Rukavina, the name thing already passed this committee and is in finance at the current time. I'm familiar with the bill. Since it was mine.
It sounds like some Politburo agency, you know, like Vladimir Putin should be in charge of it or something. So. And I know Representative Pamela wouldn't.
Representative Rukavina, we don't deal in personalities in this committee. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kurt Yoakum. I'm with Department of Finance, as the chairman mentioned. Specifically, before I start my testimony to answer Representative Bisson's question, yes, the donor does earmark the hours, and then the hours that are not used, I believe it's after 1 year, would go into a general pool that can be used. So, I'm here today on behalf of the department to share our concerns with HF 691, which would expand the current donation vacation program. Just as general background on the program, currently the commissioner is authorized to establish administrative procedures for the vacation program, application donation program For provisions such as program eligibility, duration of need on a case-by-case situation, and the monitoring and evaluation of individual eligibility status. The current design was developed in 2002 with the assistance of the state's human resource directors. Program donations are placed into account for a specific individual. The value of the donations are calculated based on the rate of pay of the donor multiplied by the number of hours donated. That value is then placed in the individual's account. There are no dollars exchanged. The donations allow the recipient to remain on the payroll at their current agency and be paid from their current agency funds. Agencies with individuals on the program absorb the cost of retaining the recipient on the program and the cost of temporary or other help needed to ensure that the recipient's work is completed while they are on the program. HF 691 would expand the program in a number of ways, and additional administrative costs and burdens to state agencies would be incurred, while most likely diluting the amount of hours available to the sickest on the program. Just going through provision by provision, and I'll do this quickly for the committee. The first provision, allowing donation of sick leave as well as vacation leave. This provision expands the state's fiscal obligation. Sick leave is used as an insurance to ensure an employee receives compensation during a paid leave as prescribed in a collective bargaining agreement or other compensation plans. Unlike vacation time, sick leave is not paid out at 100% when an employee leaves. Severance is at 40% for the first 900 hours of sick leave and 12.5% for the remainder. By including sick leave into this program, this most likely increases the number of sick hours going to be used at that 100% level, and that would be an increase in state costs. Two, expanding program eligibility provision. The current vacation donation program is intended for use by employees who cannot work due either to their own life-threatening illness or injury or that of a spouse or dependent child. At any given time, there's approximately 30 to 40 individuals participating in the program. This legislation expands eligibility for an illness or condition of the employee or member of the family, employee's family that prevents the employee from working. That is a significant eligibility, a standard change from what is currently in practice, and would most likely lead to greater utilization of the program. It's helpful from the administrator standpoint that enough hours would be donated to cover the new participants, which would be most difficult for the current participants, those that are most gravely ill. And just for illustration purposes, and by no means are we implying that this amount of people would use the program, but if you look at the number of state employees with fewer than 16 hours, that number is around 4,000 employees that have sick leave of 16 hours or less stored up. By no means are we implying that that amount of people would take advantage, but you can see that there is a significant number that may utilize the pool. Elimination, the next provision, elimination of a waiting period and maintenance of donated hours during the duration of eligible employment. The waiting period has been essential for this program, as time is needed to verify eligibility. And I should back up here, is that Representative Rukavina mentioned us during his testimony. The current waiting period is 6 weeks from when the application was received. But that time has been needed to verify eligibility, set up an account for the employee, advertise around the state agencies to receive donations, and finally the actual receipt and banking of the donation. In addition, a no waiting period, which HF 691 calls for, would draw down the pool of available hours much more quickly, to the point that it could eliminate rather quickly if there was a rapid influx of new participants. In addition, the ability for an employee to use up to 1,044 hours during the duration of eligible employment would necessitate the development of some sort of new tracking system to monitor usage over the course of a career. The next provision allows program recipients to continue to accrue vacation and sick leave while on the program. Current policy requires that all forms of existing leave are exhausted before program donations can be used. The donations allow employees to continue receiving a full paycheck. However, accruing vacation and sick time while using donated vacation time would be similar to double dipping. Employees' earned time should probably be utilized before using the donated time. And then the final provision of the deal, appeal of unfavorable determination. Current program determinations are the sole responsibility of the commissioner and not subject to appeal. Appeal to a third party could embroil the department in lengthy appeals processes. With that, I conclude my testimony. I do have an expert from the department that's familiar with the administration program, if either of us can answer any questions. Thank you.
Representative Biskin, did you have another question? No. Any further questions? Representative Riccobini, you said you had someone else to testify to that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I had contacted one of the acting lobbyists, but I don't see her in the audience, so.
Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on the bill? Seeing no one and no further questions, I'll renew my motion that House Bill 691 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Riccobini. Next bill on the agenda is House File 1113, Representative Morgan. Representative Morgan, I believe your bill goes to the General Register, is that correct? Or is there a fiscal implication here?
Mr. Chair, we're concerned that perhaps there are some fiscal implications, so we think it should go to Finance.
And I will move that House File 1113 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. Representative Morgan, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's good to be back in front of this committee. House File 1113 is an early voting bill. Currently, 31 states have early voting provisions, and in the course of the last election, we saw increased numbers of people going to the polls early to vote under the absentee ballot statute. This bill is an attempt to address the growing demand from voters to have something in Minnesota, much like they do in 31 other states, that will allow them to go and vote early without an excuse. We think it's good for voters. We think it's a matter of convenience for the voters, and this is something that people are demanding, so we're trying to address that demand. I have with me from the Secretary of State's office, Beth Frazier, and she is going to walk us through the bill.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Member. Beth Frazier with the Office of the Secretary of State. And we are grateful to Representative Morgan for carrying this bill. We think early voting is a needed improvement in Minnesota's system and something that voters would greatly appreciate. The bill is fairly simple. Section 1 adds a requirement that the statewide voter registration system provide rosters and lists necessary for early voting. Section 2 adds a reference to early voting in election law applicability. Section 3 provides a definition of early voting, that it's in person at the office of the auditor. Section 4 provides cross-references or a reference to early voting. Section 5 says that any voter may vote early. There's not an excuse required for voting early. Section 6 says that early voting has to be available from the 8th day through the 3rd day, and I believe that's actually changed in an author's amendment. Section 7 talks about the hours for early voting, basically office hours with the exception of at least one evening and a Saturday. Section 8 talks about the locations for early voting, which are the county auditor's office and municipal clerk's office if they've been delegated the responsibility for administering early voting. Section 9 requires that the county auditor prepare a notice so that voters know when and where early voting is available. Section 10 outlines the procedures for early voting. Basically, voters who show up to vote early would be treated very similar to voters in the polling place in that they would show up and sign a certification on a roster that they are eligible to vote. Election judges initial the ballot. The voter marks the ballot and puts it in either a ballot box or an optical scanner to count the vote. Basically, when they are done voting, they may not change their mind and vote again. There needs to be a record made that the voter has voted. The rosters have to be marked, so if they show up in the polling place, it's clear that they have already voted and cannot vote again. The ballots must be stored in a secure manner. The ballot box needs to be emptied at the end of each day, and there needs to be some balancing done to make sure that folks are aware of how many ballots are in the ballot box and that it's equal to the number of voters that cast a ballot, similar to the closing of polls after Election Day. And after the polls have closed on Election Day, then the votes are actually tabulated, and the vote count, like vote counts in the precinct, has to be public, and vote totals may not be released prior to the close of voting at the polls. Section 11 relates to the rosters and adding that on early rosters, that there needs to be language that says, I understand that after I have cast my ballot today, I cannot vote again in this election. That has to be put in bold. Section 12 talks about testing the voting system and that the equipment used in early voting has to be conducted as soon as practicable, and that the testing of other equipment is on the same schedule as currently, within the 14 days before the election. Early ballots would be considered a precinct in and of themselves that could be audited in a post-election review. And that's the bill as it stands before you, and I believe there is an author's amendment.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I have two author's amendments, the A1, and I believe Mr. Gehring has the A2 amendment. I don't know if that's been passed out.
Why don't we
yet.
Do the A1 first?
Okay.
I'll move the A1 amendment, so Representative Morgan, to the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment makes some clarifications about who may administer the early voting involving certification of the statewide voter registration system. It also makes the change that Ms. Fraser mentioned earlier in section 6 about the dates, the effective dates of early voting. It will start on the 15th day before the election and go until the 4th day before the election. On a standard Tuesday election in November, that would be the Friday before Election Day in November, and it would end at 5 o'clock on that day. And then there are some other changes about the effective date being in 2010 for federal, state, county, and city elections, and for all other elections in 2014, giving the townships and the school districts a little extra time to deal with this in off-year elections. But that is the substance, I believe, of the A1 amendment.
All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Morgan, you have another amendment, A2 amendment.
Yes.
I will move the A2 amendment and to the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A2 amendment is an attempt to address a concern that some people have expressed in the last week of conversations I've had with members of the committee. And that has to do with the tragic events surrounding the death of Senator Wellstone immediately preceding the 2002 election. And this is an attempt to address that situation, establishing a new definition of vacancies and nomination and a new way to deal with vacancies and nominations. And again, I'd like Ms. Fraser from the Secretary of State's office to explain that amendment if she could please.
Ms. Fraser, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The big difference between 2002 and now is the Help America Vote Act and the state adoption of the Help America Vote Act requirements for all elections. Basically, if there had been a similar tragedy this year, we could not have proceeded as we did in 02, because all elections, with very limited exceptions, are required to use accessible voting equipment. And it's not possible to reprogram all of the equipment, removing one candidate's name or adding a new candidate's name, adding a new contest after the ballots have been printed. And so in order to deal with this situation, this proposal is in front of you, which basically says that after the end of the filing and withdrawal period, that if there were a vacancy in nomination, so if a candidate were to die, or for constitutional officers, if a candidate for constitutional office were to become incapacitated, that it, for state and federal offices, it would trigger a special election to be held the second Tuesday in December. if it were a vacancy nomination for a nonpartisan office, it would, that nothing would happen. And either they would elect the other candidate, in which case that person is duly elected, or if they nominate the candidate who is deceased, then you have a vacancy in office. And there are statutes to deal with a vacancy in office. This amendment basically strikes and repeals sections of statute relating to supplemental ballots and withdrawal from office during those situations. All of the language on page 4 in section 7 related to catastrophic illness is from current statute. This is not new language. It's just being moved from another section of statute to this section of statute. So all of these provisions here allowing a candidate for constitutional office to withdraw to doctors sign a statement that the candidate has this catastrophic illness are current law.
And the city amendment. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Further amendments?
Mr. Chair, I've offered the A3 amendment. This is the photo identification bill that was heard in this committee a couple weeks ago, and I'm hopeful, I guess, that now that everybody's had some time to consider the hearing, and consider discussions with their constituents since, that there might be a change of heart on the photo ID bill. This is the same photo ID requirement that was presented before this committee, so I won't belabor the issue with a bunch of discussion unless you have questions.
All right, to the A3 amendment,
I would ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Clerk will take the roll. He did move the, Representative Emmer moved the amendment,
mm-hmm.
and he's asked for a roll call. Clerk will take the roll. Chair votes no.
Anderson?
Aye.
Diston?
Aye.
Emmer?
Yes.
Sotwalt?
Yes.
Tookie?
No.
Feinstein?
No.
Hahn?
No.
Thielen?
No.
Schiffmeyer?
Yes.
Manning? Marquardt? Morrow?
No.
Nelson?
No.
Hoppe?
No.
Sanders?
Yes.
Simon?
No.
Furness?
Yes.
Winkler?
No.
President Lang.
Lang is both here.
Mm-hmm.
No.
There being 8 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is defeated. Representative Morgan, to your bill is amended.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank the committee for getting this bill in the shape that I wanted. I think it's a good bill. Again, we're addressing a demand from members of the public. People want to have these options. People want to have an opportunity to vote at a time convenient to them in a manner that is consistent with our laws, and we want to provide them those opportunities. So I sure appreciate having the opportunity to come here, and I hope I can have the committee support.
Members, I'm going to let you ask some questions, but we do have at least 4 people who have asked to testify. So I don't know who was first with the question. Was it Representative Emmer or Representative Diston?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll wait till after you testify, who's ever.
All right. Then the first one is Ryan Anderson. Ryan, are you here? Come on down. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record. And I believe Mr. Anderson has also passed around his testimony. So please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Ryan Anderson. I'm student body president at Minnesota State University, Mankato. In addition to being student body president at Minnesota State, I also sit on the board of directors for the Minnesota State University Student Association. MSUSA represents the 70,000 students. the seven state universities in Minnesota. Besides working on issues of college affordability, we also do a lot of work around civic engagement. Throughout 2008, MSUSA worked with students across the state to engage their peers in nonpartisan voter registration, voter education, and get out the vote efforts. This fall, we registered over 6,000 students to vote, posted candidate forums on campuses, and distributed information to students about where to vote and what they needed to register on Election Day. Our work culminated on Election Day, encouraging students to get out and vote. Personally, I've been active in these efforts on my campus over the past 2 years. I'm here today to speak on behalf of students in support of early voting. Student schedules vary from day to day between class and work schedules, let alone family, work, and other obligations. I've had students tell me that they just don't have time to vote on Election Day, or may have time to run in and vote, but not wait in a long line. While absentee voting is an option, it isn't uncommon for students not to know what their schedule will look like for the first Tuesday in November until it is too late to get an absentee ballot. Students often feel more attachment to issues and races in their hometown. Early voting would allow students greater opportunity to vote at home if they wished without the complication of the absentee ballot process. Many first-time voters are unclear of what documents they will need to prove their residency. Allowing early voting would give those voters who bring incorrect documents the first time a second chance to provide correct documentation. Of course, as many students are first or second-time voters, they may not even know about absentee balloting options or the option to cast an absentee ballot in person at the office of their local election official. Whatever the obstacle, early voting is a good solution to lead to a simpler and more accessible system of casting a ballot before Election Day. While voting is important at every age, I feel that my work with college students is particularly important because we are engaging them at an early age. We know that voting is habit-forming, and as I work to engage students in election after election, I know that I am contributing to a population of lifelong voters. Early voting helps students participate in our democracy. I thank you for your support.
Questions? Representative Emmer. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Mr. Anderson, for coming. Just a quick question. Do you or any of your colleagues get reimbursed anything for the registration process?
Mr. Anderson. At our university, we did not. No, we did that as a volunteer activity.
Okay, thanks. Representative Gubbel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Anderson. Appreciate your involvement on behalf of the university students and at Mankato. I have a daughter participating at Mankato as well, so it's good to see you active and here and testifying. I do have a question. I mean, if you're involved in educating voters on your campus, Mr. Chair and testifier, about the voting process, and yet one of the arguments for doing early voting is that people are confused or don't understand when or have different situations. How many people are so confused that they would need to vote early in order to solve that confusion? How would this help that if you're already involved in educating them?
Mr. Anderson, I think we certainly do our best efforts to get out to students early and often with what documents they need, but you know, inevitably we will miss some folks, and we got a lot of calls to the student government office on Election Day asking if a lease was an acceptable document or asking what they could use, and it's also quite... It happens quite often that students wish to register on Election Day but don't have a bill in their name. I think if these problems happen before, if they try to vote before Election Day, it would give them an opportunity to get the documents they need, either from our university's registrar's office, to provide that they were current students, or just find some opportunity to get a bill in their name that would allow them to vote a second time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Anderson, of course, people know well in advance what the date of an election is, as we currently conduct them. Isn't it reasonable to expect that if they have that information as much in advance as they do, that they'd be able to plan accordingly, and that you, of course, and your volunteers and others would be able to get them information about what's required on Election Day?
Mr. Anderson.
I think that we can do our best to do that, but I think that this provides, in addition to providing those folks who don't have the right documents on Election Day, it provides a lot more opportunities for students who wish to vote at home. And other issues I mentioned, I think that students with the wrong documentation is a very small population who this would help out, but this helps out a lot of other types of students.
President Kissmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good to see you here, Ryan. Appreciate your getting experience at a young age and testifying. It's kind of a different experience than from the college campus, so I appreciate that. Ryan, one of the things when you mentioned being in the polling places in those campus areas is the long lines. Generally speaking, it seems to me that if there were more workers more stations in those polling places, more election judges. I mean, it really bothered me, too, when I visited those polling places, see the long lines. But in many cases, I often thought what you needed was more election judges to work, more stations so that you could go in there, and that having these long lines is more a function of some of those kinds of things. And if you knew that in the polling place on election day there were enough stations so that it wouldn't be that way, wouldn't that also contribute to more students voting and an easier participation?
Mr. Anderson, I guess I would certainly have to agree. I think that would certainly help. I would like to say this year that longer lines were less of an issue than I think anybody expected, at least in Lewis County. We did do a fantastic job.
Thank you.
Rest in row.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ryan, it's good to see you as well. I think one other thing you may have mentioned here is the vagaries of a college student's schedule, that some students have a heavy Tuesday, Thursday schedule, some students have a heavy Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule. Is it possible that some students simply have a from dawn to dusk schedule with sports, classes, work, study, and the like?
I think that's fairly common. I think our average student is taking somewhere between 12 and 18 credits and studying, and I think the average MSU student works over 20 hours a week. So yeah, I think it's very likely that at least a few days of the week they have a down to dusk schedule.
Further questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you,
Mike Dean. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Dean. I'm the Executive Director of Common Cause Minnesota. Common Cause is a nonpartisan government watchdog organization. The 2008 election was a historic election, with voter turnout reaching levels that we have not seen since the 1960s. The high interest in voter participation in Minnesota and nationally should be celebrated, but it also put a large strain on the system. Despite that intense pressure, Minnesota's election system performed extremely well. We did not see any large-scale meltdowns similar to those that occurred in Florida 2000 or Ohio 2004. However, the bright spotlight of the Minnesota Senate recount has allowed us to further examine the election process and identify areas that need reform. I believe that the errors we did witness could be addressed by adopting early voting. The most glaring problem was the 12,000 rejected absentee ballots. Many of these errors resulted from confusion over voter registration status and from individuals improperly filling out absentee ballot material. An early voting process would reduce these type of errors because election officials could address many problems on the spot, assuring voters that they would have their vote actually counted. For example, an early voting process will allow individuals to resolve any of those voter eligibility issues, whether it's with an ID or other. Under the current system, voters have a very small window of time to work out issues with voter registration issues when they vote absentee. Early voting would give them time to fix those problems in a reasonable period. The extra time afforded by early voting also helps take pressure off the election system. Because many states adopted early voting between 2000 and 2008, we did not see the large-scale voting problems in 2008 that have plagued earlier presidential contests. It helped reduce the flood of voters that come in on one day, which inevitably creates problems. By reducing the number of voters that vote on election day, it can also help reduce errors made by election judges. We currently demand too much from our election judges, who routinely put in 12 to 16 hours on election day. Anything we can do to reduce the burden will improve the entire process. It could also help cities, counties, and local government units that manage elections save money by not sending out so many absentee ballots, not needing to hire as many election judges, and all the administrative burdens that come with it, such as training for so many individuals. But more importantly, it makes it easier for people to vote. Election laws already create a significant number of hoops that individuals must jump through in order to vote. This important legislation gives some of that power back to voters and will encourage increased participation. Voting should be made easy and convenient. Over the last 10 years, government has worked to simplify many processes, such as paying your taxes or registering your vote. Shouldn't voting be that easy? Minnesotans lead busy lives, and we need election systems that offer convenience, thus encouraging more citizen participation. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for allowing me to speak today.
Any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Questions pertaining to voting being easy, but also being done by a voter who is well-informed. With the barrage of last-minute campaigning, last couple of weeks of campaigning, what about somebody who may not have their mind made up or who may want to change their mind? once they voted early. Mr. Dean?
I think voters that haven't made up their mind shouldn't vote early then. They obviously have a period of window, and there's a lot of people that do make up their mind. I would say many members of this committee probably made up their mind weeks in advance of the election, and so offering them that same convenience, I think, is great. But for those that did not make up their mind, they should wait until they've made up their mind and then go in on election day.
Representative Gutwong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dean, I'm a little puzzled by your own testimony. You said we had the highest voter turnout since the mid-60s. Things went remarkably well in Minnesota. You even praised the recount process, which I frankly have some concerns about. But having said that, that was done without an early voting process. In fact, throughout American history, we've had a one-day voting system other than absentee ballots. It seems to work remarkably well. People are educated about the time by which they need to have received information, made up their mind, and then go vote. I'm a little puzzled and want to ask you about how we make it easier on election judges when we ask them to spend an extra 6 days involved in the election process as opposed to one.
Mr. Dean.
I think it takes the burden off the individual election judges that are at the polling locations. Oftentimes, these are individuals that have other jobs, they're retired, and they're just not as knowledgeable as the city and county election officials. And so what we would do is we move it more towards the professional experts that would allow people to come in and vote early. They'd be making the decisions rather than relying on election volunteers who aren't always up to speed with all the election laws. Common Cause staff and election protection hotline, and they receive numerous phone calls from individuals with questions or concerns about voting. And during that process, actually caught some instances where election judges made bad decisions in terms of we're not following the law exactly. And so what we'd like to do is relieve some of that stress on election day by allowing people to come in and vote early and then vote when they are, with they'd be seeing the election administration officials in the city and county who are much more knowledgeable.
President Gubble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Dean, now we're talking about replacing volunteers who we can't trust, apparently, to do a good job with election processing. It's too much of a burden for them. With professionals, you indicated, and I'm curious, what would the cost be to now hire professionals to do the job of what we currently allow volunteer judges to do at the polling place for what would be basically a week?
Mr. Dean.
The process basically would be early voting allows election administration officials from the counties, which is the staff, would be the ones that would actually be processing all the ballots. And so those are the professionals I'm talking about. These are individuals that are already hired, already working in the process. So it's almost taking our existing in-person absentee balloting process and turning it into an early voting process. So in terms of cost, I see no cost increases at all. Actually, I would say that this would save money in the end because we'd be sending out fewer absentee ballots as part of the process. And in the long term, we'd be able to save money by not having to hire as many volunteer election judges because there wouldn't be as much demand on election day. And that's what we've seen in other states.
Representative Gello.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dean, have you contacted any counties to ask them what they think of this?
Mr. Dean.
Yes, we have. And many of them are supportive. There are a few against. I think that there is some concern of the unknown, but I think that they are generally supportive because they realize that voters are hungry for this type of reform because of the convenience factor. They've realized that America's changed since the 1700s when we decided on the first Tuesday of November as election day, and that we all have become very busy, and that allowing for early voting adds to that convenience and would update our election system.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that Representative Gottwald's questions really brought out an interesting issue, which is, at least my observation is that we already essentially have early voting now. It's just called absentee voting. And I think we all know people, I know I do, who told a little white lie on election day and said that, or prior to election day, and said they were going to be unavailable. And it really was early voting. So whether it's no excuses early or no excuses absentee voting, or early voting, I just don't think we should make criminals of the 10% who I'm told voted absentee, in quotes, this last time. I would guess that less than 100% of those voters who voted absentee were real absentee voters. They just wanted the convenience of voting early. So it seems to me we already have this in place. why not get formalized what's already in place? And there are a couple ways we could do that. We could do it with no excuses absentee, or we could do it this way, or we could do both. But I think plenty of people are already voting early. They're just kind of crossing their fingers when they sign that acknowledgement that they're going to be out of town or they're going to be unavailable. So it seems to me we already do this, and I just don't want to make criminals of the people who are doing it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this is going to finance?
Yes, it is.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dean, if you return to testify at finance, you made the statement that this will save a lot of cost, and I'd really like to know how it's going to do that, because it looks to me like it's going to cost more if you go to page 3 and it talks about having to keep it one, at least one voting station and one ballot marking device for disabled voters, and you have to maintain this prior to the election. When this comes to finance, I'd like to hear how it saves money. So, that's all.
Yeah, Mr. Dean, you don't have to respond to that.
Okay.
If there is a fiscal note, it will be available by the time it gets to finance. Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to expand on the absentee voting with excuse. I was told of a story in a county that shall be nameless where someone standing on line when they got there said, can I just vote now because I want to? And the official behind the desk said, just say you'll be out of town on that day. So it's not even, it's even often a facilitated little white lie.
Representative Meyer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I have heard, and I agree, Representative Kahn and Representative Simon, I think in essence we do, and I think this can be done in a way. The big thing here is that this bill does not fix the issue of absentee ballots. There are underlying issues here that still haven't been addressed, that you're still going to be having that. But probably the bigger thing that I find with people now say, which is the issue we dealt with before, absentee voting has a risk associated with it in going through the mail, and then there's a cost with it. And the in-person absentee voting is what I promoted a great deal because you have many of those security issues. I think we had considered that before, but we've had many issues in elections, and I think we'd be open to talking about that. Then I think this has other things. But I would rather wait for this testifier and the others to be able to finish before having a more thorough discussion. But there are a lot of people now who say, I wouldn't vote absentee again because of the issues.
Any further questions or questions? And thank you. Gwen Myers. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record, and I believe, members, you have a testimony that was passed out for you. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Gwen Myers, and I am a volunteer lobbyist for the League of Women Voters of Minnesota. The League believes that voting is a fundamental citizen right. It must be both guaranteed and promoted. Our 89-year-old organization was created by people, women, who organized around the right to vote. So whenever an election law change comes up, we're interested. I'm also an election judge, so I have a personal interest in how this bill comes out. I think it would make life a lot easier on election day. However, the League of Women Voters is not an election judge. The League supports House File 1113 for the simple reason that it will make it easier for Minnesota citizens to vote. There are many who take advantage of this opportunity. People have jobs that are somewhat unpredictable as to their hours, and some even as to the days when they will be in town. The flexibility of being able to cast a ballot anytime in the 2 weeks preceding the election will be welcome. People who know that they will not be in their precinct on election day may wish to take advantage of the simpler early voting opportunity rather than the more complicated absentee ballot process. Students have classes on the first Tuesday in November and will appreciate the flexibility of early voting. And as Mr. Anderson pointed out, students may wish to vote in their own home rather than in their school district. So this would allow that with ease. People who are frail or disabled may wish to vote early, thus avoiding long lines on election day. And finally, people who have unpredictable medical conditions. Our hotline took a number of calls on election day from people whose medical condition had taken a turn for the worse. They could not get to the polls, and they wanted to vote. And we had one obstetrician call in who just performed an emergency C-section on a woman who wanted to vote. And I hope we got her name and sent her a membership card. You know, and in fact, you know, women in the last months of pregnancy may be among the chief beneficiaries of this bill. While we understand that early voting may provide other advantages, not least reducing the number of absentee ballots, the League of Women Voters' primary reason for supporting this bill is that it will make voting more convenient for citizens who wish to take part in our democracy. We urge your support for Representative Morgan's bill. Thank you for your time this morning. If you have any questions, I'll do my best.
Any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify for or against the bill? All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Curdy. I work with the City of Roseville, and I'm here in support of this bill. Just have a few comments I'd like to make.
Could you just spell your last name for me?
C-U-R-T-I.
Thank you.
Roseville leads Ramsey County in the percentage of absentee voters. We had 17.3% voters. The statewide average was 10.3. This reflects our demographics. Roseville has an older population compared to most cities in the state. I think Roseville is a leading indicator for the rest of the state demographically. Our population is getting older. Older votes are more likely to vote, vote early, either in person or by mail. I've been working on elections for 8 years. I think one of my strengths as an employee is my organizational skills, coupled with my strong work ethic. I have developed a good system to handle absentee ballots. But processing absentee ballots is extremely costly and a labor-intensive responsibility which has several chances for human error. Roseville has approximately 240 election judges from ages 18 to 92. They get 2 to 3 hours of training and work 2 to 4 elections every 2 years. I think we need to acknowledge that people are voting early and create a system to handle it. In 2006, Roseville had 9% of the absentee voters. It doubled, as I said, to 17.3% in 2008. Statewide elections officials have seen an increase in absentee ballots. Allowing early voting and allowing voters to feed their ballots into the machine, the voters would know immediately whether they've overvoted or have had other problems with their ballot. We would get rid of the envelopes. That's the cost. One of the cost savings that I see immediately. We use 3 to 4 envelopes for an absentee ballot. If we can get rid of those, we're saving the environment and we're saving money. We'd eliminate the problems of not having the appropriate signatures or witnesses. Of the approximately 90 absentee ballots that were rejected in Roseville in this last election, 27 of them had signature errors. I think that could have been eliminated had voters come into City Hall to vote. I strongly urge your support. I do want to mention, Roseville has a senior population. You talked about college kids coming in to vote, but it's the senior citizens who I am mostly concerned about. I had one story I just want to share. A woman calling me wanting to vote. She didn't have anyone to be a witness. Could someone come and pick her up and bring her to City Hall to help her vote? Well, we can't do that. I suggested that she had a family member. Well, my son, could he be? No, he lives in Wisconsin, but he's going to be here next week. Could he sign? No. We finally were able to figure out that she could ask the postman if he would be her witness. But she wanted to vote. She had a son who could come and drive her to City Hall, but he could not be the witness. And those are the people who might not be able to make it to the polling place on election day. And those are the people who I want to help get votes. And I urge your support.
Questions? Seeing no questions, thank you very much. Anyone else wish to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, then members, to the bill is amended. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members, and Representative Ward and Ms. Fraser. In regards to the amendments that we have before us and some of the issues right now, I have a few concerns, and I think certainly the issues that we have in front of us at this time would be, I have a question, would the disability equipment be available during early voting?
Representative Morgan, should we refer those questions to Ms. Fraser?
Let's refer the details of the process to Ms. Fraser, if that would
be okay. Representative Morgan, well, Ms. Fraser.
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, yes, the AutoMark would be available for the entire time, just as it is now during the whole absentee balloting period.
Representative Plan.
Well, in the bill here, it says that, let me see, that the equipment on line 622, sorry, Mr. Chairman, it's on line 615 or 624. In that area, there were several different places where this was dealt with. But it says the testing of the equipment used for early voting must be conducted as soon as practicable after the equipment has been programmed, and that testing of equipment used on the day of the election must be conducted within the 14 days before election day. So what I'm seeing here is a practical issue. You have a testing equipment used on election day, testing the equipment and programming 15 days before election day. And from my discussions and from what I've seen here, there is no a guarantee here that when early voting starts, my understanding is there would be a ballot box. In other words, if the equipment weren't ready, they would just be put into a ballot box, a secured ballot box, I guess, and that you'd have this equipment ready and maybe not ready by the start of early voting. Because I know this has been a real issue for the local governments to get all of this stuff ready just for election day. And now you're moving all of that up by 15 days. And it could be, yeah, that's probably where it is. Again, we have two amendments here, and the final bill, and these two amendments are just here this morning. The A1 amendment, that's probably where I read it as I was doing this, 233. As soon as practicable, following the public accuracy test, the county auditor must make an electronic ballot counter available. That means those voters may or may not get the benefit of that equipment, and we have also issues, and so I'm just concerned that this will even mess with the Federal Help America Vote Act, all the requirements that we worked very hard to put in place before. So can you address some of those issues?
Just as for the members' benefit, Representative Morgan has met the last couple of days with several members of the committee and with the amendments. So I would hope that the members, at least those that he had met with, and he met with me and my staff on the amendments to make sure we were familiar with them. So I know that maybe not everyone on the committee, but certain people on the committee have been met with by Representative Morgan. Ms. Frazier, to the question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, as is true now, the AutoMark would be available for the entire absentee voting period, including the 15 days of the early voting period. And if an electronic ballot marker were not available, if a voter had a concern that they may have overvoted, they could put their ballot into the AutoMark and would get an indication whether or not they had overvoted in the race. We, after working with local election officials, actually think that a 30-day early voting period would be preferable. But in conversation with the governor's office, they indicated a preference for a shorter period, which is why Representative Morgan has a 15-day period in this bill. I think it's very likely that the electronic ballot marker would be available for the full 15-day period. There's a big difference between getting perhaps 500 tabulating machines available for election day and getting a few available for the city and county offices. And I think it's very possible to get the few that are needed for early voting available within this time period while still giving the local jurisdiction the full time needed to test the equipment for election day. If we wanted to say that all of the equipment had to be available 15 days out, you're right, that would be a burden, but that's not what this says.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, thank you for the indulgence. I know my legislative neighbor from Dakota County and I have talked about meeting at the American Legion in Savage, but we haven't gotten around to it yet, so I do have a couple of questions on the bill. The first, Representative Morgan, if I could turn your attention to page 5, lines 16 through 19. Representative Morgan, that is where you ask the voter to sign a roster with a new statement in there, and I truly do appreciate that. However, Representative Morgan, on lines 5.14 and 5.15, there is a penalty for giving false information on the roster. However, I don't believe that penalty would apply if a person decided they wanted to vote again. Is it your intent that there should be a penalty applied for a person who tries to use early voting as a way to not only vote early, but vote often?
Ms. Frazier, perhaps, would like to respond to that, or Russell Morgan's going to respond.
Mr. Chair, if you'll allow me to respond, that is exactly my intent. I think it's clearly stated in here that all of the applicable laws apply, voting laws that we currently have apply to early voting, and that would certainly be an example of voter fraud and voter misrepresentation, which would be subject to those felony laws.
Ms. Frazier?
Mr. Chair, Representative Diskin, if you look at 5.13, part of the oath that a voter signs both when they early vote and on election day says that they have not already voted in the election.
Thank you. Representative Diskin, that is?
Yep, thank you. No, I have one more question, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other issue I have, and thank you for that explanation, the other issue that I have, Representative Morgan, goes directly to a statement made by one of your testifiers, Mr. Anderson from the University of Minnesota, talked eloquently about the opportunity early voting affords college students to make sure that they have the right documentation when they come to the poll, and I think that's a laudable goal. Representative Morgan, is it your intention that this bill would prevent vouching during the early voting period? In other words, people would come to the polling place with the correct documentation rather than have a third party vouch for them?
Members, Mr. Anderson was not the University of Minnesota, it was Minnesota State University of Mankato, MSUSA, that's a different organization.
I stand corrected, Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, it is not my intention to change the way the current law deals with current absentee voting. So I believe under the current law, under absentee voting, there is vouching allowed, so this would continue that practice for early voting.
Representative Gutwald, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Morgan, for bringing this forward. I think it's a good discussion. I think we all want people who want to vote to be able to vote. I would beg to differ in light of the testimony both Representative Simon offered as well as some of the testifiers. The system we have now is working, apparently. We have had very high voter turnout. This system has been in place for some time. The argument that it's more convenient to leave it open longer also opens up a number of questions. The more times you expand a process and touch a ballot and have a process for collecting ballots and counting them and keeping them, the more chances there are for mistakes along the way. So I have concerns about voter integrity, the integrity of the vote, the recount process, how these ballots are handled versus current absentee ballots or ballots cast on election day. The designation within 90 days of a location by the county auditor, any place, I assume this could be a mall, it could be a parking lot, it could be a car dealership, it could be anywhere. That's in the law here. In fact, it says right here under Section 8, over free, the lines 3.29 to 3.31, and at any other location designated by the county auditor or municipal clerk at least 90 days before the election. Any other location. And even if we take the existing polling places, some of these are churches and schools. So if we're going to designate regular polling places for people to vote and leave them open an extra 6 days, what does that mean for those facilities? While we heard testimony that we'd have professionals from the county there, not volunteers, there is a section in the bill that refers to two staff of the county auditor or two election judges of different major political parties doing that. So we have volunteers or professional staff. This does complicate things. I have no doubt that it makes it more convenient, which argues, well, if 6 days are convenient, why wouldn't 15 days be more convenient? Why wouldn't 30 days be more? Why don't we have a whole year of electing? That way everybody's really got an opportunity. But the truth is we've always set one day. We focus our energy and our resources. We're able to get there. I have not personally heard stories of people who are unable within the time period the polls are open or the absentee process that's currently in place to be able to cast a vote who want to. We all know months, if not years in advance, what the election day is going to be. So I guess I have some deep concerns about the integrity of the balloting. We've got a more complicated process here, and the chance for more problems cropping up, especially in the case of a recount. I'd be curious to hear our auditor's representative here describe what happens with these ballots in the case of a recount. That would be interesting to hear.
Representative Morgan, I don't know which of those you wish to refer to.
Mr. Chair, there were certainly a lot of questions there, and I'm sure there are some fancy Latin words for some of the arguments that my friend Representative Gottwalt used to try to tear down the credibility of the change we're trying to bring to Minnesota here. The integrity of our voting system is incredibly important. It's the most important thing in our democracy. And I think that these changes will improve the integrity of that system. I think these changes will make sure that people have more options. We've heard testimonies from the woman from Roseville, who said that this will reduce the number of people involved in the process, making decisions, the chances for error. And I believe that is the case. So I think we're going to improve the process here. I think it's going to be something that folks really appreciate, having more opportunities, whether they're college students or seniors or people with an illness or people who work two jobs or people with kids who have a hard time getting to the polling place on certain days because of their responsibilities with their children. I think this is going to improve turnout, improve voter participation in our democracy, and that's a good goal for all of us.
Just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair and Mr. Morgan. Questions and concerns about a more complicated extended process and ballot integrity are not meant to tear down a bill. They are meant to raise legitimate questions. Integrity of the voting process should be one of our paramount concerns, and there are deep concerns from county people, city staff, people who watch the voting process, even members of the League of Women Voters who I've spoken with about this process. Not all of them are in concert, and with all due respect to the lobbyists, many of them think differently about this. We had testimony from one person from Roseville, but I could probably find you people from several other communities, if not county places, that are very concerned about the complexity of this process. And one question I would like the answer to before we end here is what happens with these ballots in a recount process? How are they handled? This does imply more work, more effort, more people touching ballots, more people involved in the process. So before we just roll over to convenience sake, as I mentioned, the time frame is great for convenience, but the way our system currently works applies a certain amount of discipline and responsibility to the freedom to vote and seems to work relatively well, where it's used elsewhere in the world. We typically have a day to vote, and people turn out and they cast their vote, and we have an election. So before we go to this, I'd want to have more assurances about those things, the cost, the complexity, and the integrity of the balloting process, especially in a recount. Perhaps you can answer that question on the recount.
Remember, this bill is going to finance, so costs will be handled there. Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwalt. In terms of a recount, these ballots would need to be reviewed to see whether there are any ballots from the precinct being recounted, if it's a local or legislative race, anything but a statewide race. Each ballot would need to be reviewed to see if it belongs in that precinct, in which case it would be separated out and then included with the other ballots in the recount of that race. If it were a statewide recount, then it would be treated as a separate precinct, and just like every other precinct, would be counted by hand.
Representative Gottwald, and I do have a couple of more members who wish to ask questions.
Just one more, Mr. Chair. This whole issue of designating a location within 90 days, that could be different than a precinct, I assume, or a precinct polling location. So he's talking about geographically, if the location selected for early balloting was in the precinct, it would be counted part of the precinct or counted as a separate precinct.
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott Walt, the language about designating locations 90 days ahead is the current standard for designating places for in-person absentee voting before the election. And just like in-person absentee voting locations, any early voting location would need to have internet access so that the people could access the statewide voter registration system and immediately mark that somebody had voted. It would need to have a secure place to store the ballots. And you need to have ballots for anyone that might come in. So if you're a city, you need to have all of the ballots for the different precincts in the city. Ballots under this prep, under this bill, would be counted centrally. So they would not be sent to the precinct to be counted. They would be counted at the location where they were cast.
Representative Tom.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to respond to Representative Scott Wolf's comment that everything works okay. I assume that you have never been at a precinct that had a line streaking out the door at 8 p.m., did not finish their regular voting until 10 o'clock p.m., and at that point then had several hundred absentee ballots, which then had to be dealt with by election judges who had been there since 6 or earlier or something like that, some of whom were very elderly. And then one of the things that you have to do, of course, is you have to check off to make sure they didn't come in and vote during the day, because that's needed. This really cleans up that system. And I had multiple precincts in my district that had that problem.
Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question I have at this time is, does this bill, as it's currently written, deal with any of the absentee voting? I'm assuming, obviously, we're going to still be having absentee voting. The biggest issue that we're seeing after the 08 election is absentee voting issue. Does this bill deal with absentee voting?
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Giffmeyer, as we discussed yesterday, no, perhaps fewer people will vote absentee because they have this opportunity to vote early. I think that they will. That remains to be seen. But other bills, hopefully, are being prepared that will work on some of the problems with absentee voting. And you had mentioned some of your ideas yesterday, and I encourage you to pursue those, and maybe those will be some of the ways that we go on that issue.
Representative Kiffmeyer, there is a bill that does deal with the issues that have arisen out of the last election with the absentee ballot. This bill does not, but there is a bill. Representative Merle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Morgan, you and I have talked about this bill, and I've shared some of that. I have some concerns about the bill, but I have a specific set of questions. They relate around the hours for early voting, and I've been looking at 203B, section 0.085, excuse me, and the hours, for example, for absentee ballots is 10 to 3 on Saturday, but this bill says 8 to 4 on Saturday for early voting. 203B.085 doesn't talk about the specific hours for absentee ballots during the week, yet this bill does. So I've got some questions about aligning exactly the early voting hours with the absentee voting hours, my concern being the cost to counties if we now set up another system where they have additional hours that they have to be available.
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, we believe that on average, this will be a wash or save local government's costs, that there are many reduced costs with reduced postage, reduced envelopes, many of the costs that Ms. Curdy raised, and that being open a few extra hours on one of the Saturdays will not tip the balance in favor of this being a more costly option.
Representative
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I'm going to come back to, for example, for absentee ballots, offices must be open for acceptance of absentee ballot applications and casting of absentee ballots from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday before election. But this requires 8 to 4 on Saturday for early. I'm trying to understand why we wouldn't just align the hours for both I'll acknowledge that there may be cost savings, but I still don't understand the alignment.
Representative Morris. Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Morris. You make a very good point, and I am happy to work with the Secretary of State's office and county and local elections officials to try and come to some agreement that will work. We certainly don't want to have 8 hours available for absentee voting and then another 8 hours available on the same day for early voting. That doesn't make any sense. So we want to try and align them and make sure things match up so that we can reduce costs for counties and cities.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, a question to Ms. Frazier. I know this is a difficult statistic to try to understand, but and I don't remember you saying it this morning, but do we have evidence that early voting in other states can be linked to increased turnout, or is this some sort of a intuitive understanding?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I actually don't believe that there is evidence that early voting leads to increased turnout. I think it changes the time when voters turn out, but doesn't necessarily increase turnout.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, I'm going to support your bill. I do support your bill. I'm going to vote for it. But it seems to me the major thing that we gain is what Representative Simon described, which is basically our system of absentee voting has evolved into a de facto early voting system, except that now we have people telling white lies in order to do the early voting. And so this bill at least has the beneficial effect of eliminating the necessity of a white lie to do early voting and regularizes and standardizes the process, which I think is all good. The only downside I see is that there's something to be said, I think, for the civic experience of an election day and having one day when people are supposed to turn out at some community location and participate as a citizen in democracy as opposed to somebody who is a consumer, and a consumer is looking for more convenience, and early voting, I think, pushes us more towards a more passive or consumer-oriented view of voting and citizen and civic participation. So that's the only downside I see to this. And that leads me to a question, which is has anybody looked at the potential effects of having Election Day be a holiday? In which it would be hard to argue for anybody that they wouldn't be able to turn out on that day, that an absentee process couldn't adjust.
Representative Morgan. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, I think we may find out that is correct. One thing that I think will happen is that there are some people who are very nostalgic about Election Day, and they have a routine on Election Day, and they want to continue to do that, and they will. I think today's modern-day schedules, whether it's for students or seniors or parents, put some folks in a position where they really struggle to get to the polling place between 7 and 8 on Election Day. And I think this will make it easier for them. We have some folks who want to vote early now but really are committed to following the law, and they're not willing to tell that little white lie, as Representative Simon said. And I think those folks will now feel comfortable doing that. About making Election Day a holiday, I've heard talk about that. I've never heard it get anywhere. I imagine there'd be a lot of opposition to that from businesses, and I think this might be an easier fix to the problem.
We could just rename better.
Representative Winkler. Representative Winkler, that's for another committee. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a quick clarification. For our rural outstate counties, do you envision one polling place per county, or how do you see that in our more sparsely populated counties?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, that would be up to the county auditor and would likely be the same as how they currently handle in-person absentee.
Representative Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think these are for Ms. Frazier. Actually, the first one, I've got three of them. First one is, do you have any idea how many citizens would use early voting?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zimmer, we don't. We know that between 60,000 and 100,000 people voted in-person absentee this past year, so many of them would vote early instead, but we don't have a prediction.
Representative Zimmer.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Frazier, then, so best estimate would probably be something within that 50,000 to 100,000 mark.
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zimmer, I think it's a little hard to predict because this would not require an excuse, so there may be people that aren't voting absentee now that would choose to vote early.
Second one is the A2 amendment. When we started this discussion, Representative Kiffmeyer had asked if the A2 amendment didn't effectively make machines optional, because it changes the requirement that they be tested and ready to go 15 days in advance to as soon as practicable. And you gave a kind of detailed answer without saying that's true. Am I reading this wrong? Because it seems to, it doesn't just imply, it states directly that as soon as practicable, following the public accuracy test, the county auditor must make an electronic ballot counter available. That doesn't seem to be a requirement that it will be ready on this date.
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, the electronic ballot counter may, or you're right, it may or may not be available on the first day of early voting. The accessible voting equipment would be available from the beginning.
Representative Emmer, you had one more?
I do, but I want to follow that one up. You don't see that as a problem, that the electronic ballot counter may or may not be available?
Ms. Frazier?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, no, not a large problem. But I believe that counties will do all that they can to get it available, to get it ready and available as soon as they can. And if they can have it ready the 15 days ahead, I believe that they will.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Frazier, you know, not a large problem is not the answer. It's either no, it's not a problem, or it is. Not a large problem means it could be a problem. So the question is, why not just make it a hard and fast rule that it will be ready to go 15 days in advance?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, that may be an option. Before we make that amendment, I would like the opportunity to talk to the county auditors and ensure that they believe that it is possible to do that. We were suggesting that there be a 30-day early voting period, and that was changed again. So in that case, it would not be possible to have the machines available from the very beginning. It may be possible to do that, but I'd like to talk to the locals before that change is made.
Last summer, if you go to page 6, when you're talking about the review and the county canvassing board, you know, the whole canvassing issue, you put in one sentence, which seems to suggest, and if you could explain to me this early ballots counted centrally, what does that mean? Give me a definition of that. And then it seems to suggest that every early vote is going to be considered one precinct, which is a little different, I think, from what Representative Gottwald was asking. Maybe I totally misunderstand that sentence, but if you could make that clear for me, I'd appreciate it.
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, for the post-election review, precincts are selected at random to decide which precincts are reviewed. Because these ballots would not be counted in a precinct, we would consider them as a whole a precinct that could be chosen for review. So in a county where some cities are designated, each city's ballot, as well as any ballots cast at the county, would be considered a separate precinct that could be chosen for review.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Emmer.
So then I must have misunderstood. I thought Representative Gottwald was asking you specifically about precincts and how they get related back. For purposes of this process, they're just going to be one. That's what you...
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, yes, for this process, they would be one. I understood Representative Gottwald's question is about recount.
Right, okay. That's what I was asking. Thanks.
All right, Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Frazier and or Representative Morgan, my question is, or two questions. First, how does this bill line up with other states as far as those that have adopted early voting? And then secondly, what have we seen in those other states as it relates to cost, turnout? Has it been a smooth process? Have we seen major problems in those areas? Just wonder if you could comment on that.
Ms. Frazier or Representative Martin?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sanders, I don't have figures in front of me from other states. I believe that this lines up fairly well with other states. Different states have different periods during which they allow early voting. I believe that 15 days is a fairly common period, ending the fourth day ahead. And we have been in conversation with other states about the process and how it's worked for them, and for the most part, it's worked fairly well.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Frazier, I just want to make sure that I understand on the machines. I'm reading 203B.081, locations for absentee voting in person. Eligible voter may vote by absentee ballot during the 30 days before the election. You get to the last line. The county auditor must also make available at least one electronic ballot marker in each polling place that's implemented the polling voting system accessible for individuals with disabilities. Does this mean there would be an electronic ballot
Ms.
marker Frazier. Available?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, yes.
Thank you.
All right. Further discussion. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morgan, I think you probably would agree that this is a significant change in the way we do elections in Minnesota. And I don't think I would characterize this as just like absentee voting, only same kind of thing as absentee voting. I don't think that's the case at all. Really what we're doing is setting up multiple election days with this proposal, it seems to me. Instead of one election day, we will have multiple election days, which I think changes the whole feeling of the election process. So this is not a simple change. What particularly concerns me is the A2 amendment. While this may be germane to the bill, it seems to me this brings up a whole another set of issues that really need more examination than what we're able to give it here today. And I have particularly a question on page 5, subdivision 7. Specifies the date of a special election should there have been a vacancy. What happens if there is a vacancy right before that special election? What happens if there was a vacancy, a special election had to be called because of a vacancy, and then there was another vacancy that occurred prior to that date of special election? What would happen then?
Representative Morgan. Mr. Chair, let me make sure I understand your question, Representative Lanning. You're saying, because the only thing that could trigger this special election is death or a catastrophic illness that would essentially incapacitate the candidate from doing the job that they are on the ballot to do. So your question is, if we had a special election forced because of that, and then another event in the same race occurred immediately before that special election,
yeah,
what do we do then?
Yeah.
Representative Morgan. Wow. that's a lot of tragedy. Representative Morgan, before you answer, if members have their cell phones on and they're working, we're picking it up through the system. So if we could turn your cell phones and other personal devices off, please. Thank you. I'm told the power has to be off with some of your devices, but we are picking it up, and it's beginning to actually make inaudible the recording system. So could we keep them off, or would you leave the room? Representative Morgan, to the tragic event.
Mr. Chair, I think one of the problems that Representative Lanning may be addressing is that the specificity under the date of special election, the special election must be held on the second Tuesday in December. Therefore, if for that special election there were a similar tragic event, what would the law say? We would have to wait till the next second Tuesday in December? And I guess that's a good question. Perhaps I'll defer to the Secretary of State's office to see if they have an answer for that.
Ms. Frazier, I'm sure you've anticipated this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, That is a good question. That these type of tragedies have not happened often, and two happening in the same context would be quite unusual, but perhaps language should be added explaining what would happen if that were to happen.
Representative Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Frazier. I think what this is trying to address was a very rare occurrence with the tragic death of Senator Wellstone. But it was a rarity, but it did happen. It seems to me the same thing could happen, maybe very rarely, but it still could happen. And if we're going to make, this is a very significant change in the way we go about treating Election Day and basically saying election doesn't count. And so people running for that office have to go through the whole process again for another month or so. And because of that, I think we'd better consider all contingencies here if we're going to do this.
Representative Klingman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morgan and Ms. Frazier, I want to personally thank you for your patience in answering all of my questions over the last, actually, 2 or 3 months in Ms. Frazier's case about this proposal. I'm convinced, Representative Lanning, that this is actually a minor change and merely making more secure and more reliable the existing pattern of showing up and voting early, and having authored the no-excuse absentee voting 2 years ago that did not become law, as well as the military and overseas absentee bill that did become law, that this bill will make it easier for folks who show up early to be assured that their votes do get counted, for the recount process to be more secure, and also to take some of the burden off what I think Representative Kahn was describing that I heard in witnessing the recount and speaking to some of the election judges who are the chief election judges for their precinct, who some have to rise at 5 or earlier in the morning to have the facility, the precinct location, open at 6 for the rest of the election judges, who are now working the entire day, including people in line voting until 9 or 10 o'clock, dealing with all the registration issues, dealing with all the absentee ballots after that, and then some of whom are not able to leave until 1, 2, or 3 in the morning. I think that early voting will do everything that we've heard today and also make the process more secure. And I just want to thank you, Representative Morgan and Ms. Frazier, for your diligence in meeting with as many members of the committee as have had questions before and today.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 691 is amended be recommended to pass. I'm sorry. House File 1113 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails. Meeting is adjourned.